So we've gotten a little bit of an introduction to the topics in this Masechta, or to the topic at least for the beginning of this Masechta. We've talked about Shechita as a goal. I've talked about it as either an actual mitzvah or something akin to a mitzvah or something less than a mitzvah. And we talked about what its philosophical themes might be and how they may inform some of the halachic details. And if you recall from the very beginning, so we assumed that the structure of the Mishnah and the structure of the Gemara also is going to reflect something fundamental about what's going on here. So if you recall, we asked, why does the Masechta start with this din of Hakol Shochta? Now, true, it's a logical place to start if you want to know the rules, so it makes sense to start with who gets to do it, who has to do it, etc. But still, you know, the very basic things that we don't know yet about Shechita, and one might think even just defining Shechita might be a good place to start. So the idea that we start with Hushechts, we highlighted that as something that probably is important for us on a very fundamental level, because it does connect to the question of what is Shechita? Is Shechita a religious duty? Is it a mitzvah that somebody has to be obligated in order to fulfill on behalf of others? Is it a personal obligation that you need to do for yourself? Is it something that's simply a technicality that just has to happen? And we know that in various areas of halacha, we have different requirements. Sometimes tefillin have to be written by somebody who's obligated. Sukkah, we discussed, doesn't have to be constructed by somebody who's obligated, which seems to connect to the point that building the sukkah may not actually be the mitzvah, or presumably isn't the mitzvah of sukkah. So the question of who is obligated, who's doing it, is probably pretty central to understanding what exactly the mitzvah or non-mitzvah is. So when it comes to Shechita, so we're getting somewhat of an impression here, but if you start to see the Gemaras, and you really have to see another Mishnah also to properly appreciate this, is that it's not so simple. Right? So even though we start off with a word that sounds pretty simple, the Gemara very quickly tells you that word is not so simple. Hakol, what could be questionable about that? Everybody come and check. Not so simple. Right? So the Gemara is going to take up the question of, first of all, what does Hakol mean to convey in its tone? And that's one of the major issues that the Gemara is trying to figure out for the next two block. Is that call a way of saying, come on, it's a party, everyone come, no problem, we're all equal here? Or is there actually a lechachila and b'diavad involved? And just parenthetically, so we talked a little bit about the question of whether as a mitzvah daraisa or maybe as a matir, is the language of lechachila and b'diavad relevant to Shechita, but we also noted that in this context, this is like a different usage. This is saying as a policy. So, l'charchila, this is a good idea, and there's nothing to think about. Or, no, we're saying that there may be various reasons not to pursue whatever we're talking about here, but l'maisa, if it is shechted by whichever individual we'll be discussing, it's still going to be acceptable. It's really more of a policy question than it is something about the nature of the mitzvah. Yes, Maureen.
A question on the last one of the Mishnah.
Yes.
As called the Shochtin, v'shchitas v'kashira, isn't that a redundancy?
Oh, so that's the Gemara's problem. It's a part of the Gemara's problem. The Gemara's problem is that either it's a redundancy or we are stuck in some kind of a contradiction. It's either a contradiction or a redundancy. I mean, it doesn't seem to me much space in the middle, because the language of Shechitas and Kshera, the Gemara is going to pick up on, that sounds b'dievet. That sounds like, if it happened, okay, the Shechita is acceptable, but we wouldn't have necessarily told you to do that. So then the question is Hakol Ksherin one or the other? Is it redundant to that, or is it contradictory to that? So that's essentially what's bothering the Gemara here, that we say that Hakol is a language of lechachila, in which case then Shechitas and Kshera is a language of b'dieved, and that doesn't seem to flow. Or do we say that it's also a language of b'dieved, and then why do we need both? And just to give you a little bit of an outline here, so the Gemara at the beginning, the very first Amud, is going to take up the question of Hakol. Does it have a standard tone throughout Shas. We have Hakol in other places. Does Hakol always mean one way or another? So the Gemara right away will say, for example, just to look at the line aside, so Hakol Shofte L'chachila V'shtitas N'ksheira B'di'evet. So what's going on? Is it L'chachila? Is it B'di'evet? So then the question of whether Hakol really means that is brought into question. Amalei Ravacha Reid Rav L'Ravashi V'kol Hakol L'chachila Hu. L'chachila is always, Hakol is always L'chachila. I'll tell you one place right off where it isn't. El Me'at Hakol Me'mirim. That if you learned Masechus Temura, anybody who's holding in Daf Yomi, now Temura is yesterday, Temura is the previous Masechta, things are switched, tomorrow often turns into yesterday, but there, the whole concept of Temura is a prohibition. You're not allowed to switch one animal for another. You have a korban, you decide that, you know what, you didn't want to actually give that animal for a korban, you'd rather switch it to a different animal, so that's an aveir in the Torah, you're not allowed to do it. So if Hakol is a chachila, so how can we say Hakol Memirim? And then go on to say Echad Anoshim V'Echad Noshim. So Hachanami L'Cherchilo, that's also L'Cherchilo, to do that. Do an Avera, we're going to tell you it's L'Cherchilo. So Gemara explains, no, you know, Haksev L'Echlifenev L'Yomerosos, and the Torah say not to do this, Tov V'Roa Ro B'Tov. No, Hasim Tiny Taimus, so the Gemara there says that there it explains, Lo Shah Adam Rishai L'Hamir. It doesn't mean to imply that you're allowed to do this, that it's not Navera. Ella Shimheimir Mumer, that if somebody did it, that it has effect, that it actually converts the korban, the second animal, into a kodesh, although the Torah tells us they're both kodesh. You know, it's not actually successful because the first animal stays kodesh and the second animal becomes kodesh, and you've committed the avera, mazel tov, so you get the malchus, the sulfur gets arbayin. So, alright, we don't know what to do with that hakol. Hakol is the chachila, it's not the chachila. So, okay, let's look to another recent Tafyomi Masechta. El hakol marichin v'nerachim, nodrin v'nidorim. So there we're talking about taking the darim. That's also l'chachila. Don't we say v'aksiv kisechta lindar liyabachachet v'aksiv tova sherlo tidor mishetidor v'lo teshalim? Don't we say that it's better not to get involved in darim in the first place? V'tanya tov mizah mizah she'ino noder kolikar. The best is you don't get involved in the darim at all. Devar Rebeir and Rabbi Huda Omer tov mizah mizah noder mishalim. So, okay, so Rabbi Huda says it's good to make a neder and to pay it back. But, I feel Rabbi Huda lo ka'amar ela ba'omer harezu, ba'omer he'alai lo. Okay, we have a complicated attitude towards Nadarim. Nadarim is also l'chachila, so hakol there, that means l'chachila. So it doesn't sound like it's l'chachila. And the Gemara comes back and says, now we're on the top of our bays, and says, well, l'kol hakol lav l'chachila hu, so you shot down the whole idea that Hakol is l'chachila. Some hakols certainly seem to be l'chachila. Hakol chayav b'sukkah, hakol chayav mitzitzis. Hachanami, d'lav l'chachila. So you can tell me those are l'chachila? Lo chayav lo kaminas. If the language is chayav, so then fine, we understand that obviously that's l'chachila because telling you how to do it. So Gemara is going to go on with this for a little bit, but just to basically give the framework for going further. So essentially what we see here is that there's a big effort to try to figure out what the Mishnah is telling us. Because the Mishnah itself seems a little bit conflicted. Right? That Hakol is not necessarily an absolute pass, or at least the rest of it isn't an absolute pass. And we have to figure out what exactly is the message. So Hakol is already a little bit tentative, because maybe it's the Chila, maybe it's not. And in any event, it's qualified in the Mishnah. The Mishnah is saying there are some where it's not necessarily so l'chachila. Something we just say shchitas and ksheira, that it's acceptable after the fact. And the Mishnah also said there's exceptions to that also. Chutz mecheira shelta v'katan. And we have somebody who's in that category, which the halacha says they don't have das, whatever that means, to one degree or another. So right, so there, they are not in the category either of l'chachil or b'di'evet, because we're worried about maybe they'll mess up the shechita. But hold on, not that it's totally bad b'di'evet, because there is a possibility. But if they did shecht and others saw, so then the shechita can be acceptable. And the Gemara is also going to be troubled by that language. We'll see if we have time to look inside. Because who's the kulon sheshachtu? Are we just talking about what we just mentioned, this cheresh shot of a cotton? And apparently the Mishnah had kind of three categories. So there is l'charchila, those who would shech l'charchila. We haven't figured out who they are, but there are people who would shech l'charchila. People who would shech only b'di'evet. Ketanim, cheresh shot of a cotton, who really, even b'di'evet, is not acceptable. But if somebody else can saw, somebody else saw it and can talk about it, then that is okay. But that's four. And that fourth category the Gemara is going to pick up, it doesn't sound like it's just modifying cotton, because the Gemara will ask a few times that it's talking about cotton first, right? So why doesn't it just say that in that context, if they shechted, then, and other people saw, then it's okay. What's the kulon? Kulon is coming to include something else. So the Mishnah is very challenging. And the Gemara is going to spend two blot trying to offer suggestions as to what is what, and what fits where, and what's going on. But one thing we can say after finishing this Mishnah is that it's not as simple as it sounded. Right? It started off hakol, open season, everyone come in, nothing to talk about, and we see already there's quite a lot to talk about. There's all kinds of different levels. And we don't know yet what that tells us about the concept of shechita. So is shechita disconnected from any sense of obligation? Is it like a sukkah? Like Gemara says, a sukkah can be built by anyone. Or is there some aspect of limitation here? Is there anything? So based on what we've seen so far, do we know that there's anything that's required to be a kasher shochet, at least b'di'evet? Hi.
Well, I mean, the Tosfos was mentioning, and the Rosh was also mentioning that the Yerushalmi says that Nashim can't shech because das kavas.
Okay, so Nashim is actually, as is right, often the case,
not even in the Mishnah.
Right, so Nashim, it's very interesting that Nashim are left out of the Mishnah,
right,
one way or another. Right, not as good or bad, and that deserves its own discussion. So actually, don't take this the wrong way, but the Nashim are going to leave ladies last in this case, because where they fit into this equation is the topic of a lot of discussion, and we'll see. It's also heavily affected by Minig, and we'll see some of the most controversial issues of the day, believe it or not, are highly affected by that discussion. Yeah, so we'll push that off for a few days. Not ducking it, but just it clearly has its own set of parameters. So let's hold off for the Nashim and let's discuss everything else.
Shechita is result-based, mm-hmm. So in theory, there isn't like so much like a set of requirements you would need in order to do Shechita.
That's so, what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Right. You're saying that based on the Mishnah, or you're saying just based on...
Based on what I've seen before and a little bit of the Mishnah.
Okay, so the Mishnah by itself, it sounds like that, right? The Mishnah sounds like we're saying that there aren't any requirements. The open statement, Hakol Sheirin. And the only concern that we have, and maybe you'll get this impression from at least some of the Gemaras that we started with, we're worried that it should be done right. And so if there's somebody who we're a little iffy about as far as it being done right, so then that's going to be a problem, and maybe even a problem with the Eved, unless there's somebody who can vouch for it. So it sounds like it's only a technical issue, which may support your assumption that it's result-based. Hi.
Without the word hakol, how do you know that everyone could check?
So I mean, if Misha just started off saying some people shchitas and kshera, like that?
Yeah.
So you're saying, so it's not redundant because you need to phrase a sentence,
yeah,
somehow. Although Mishnah could have said maybe Elu Shchitasan Kshera Velo Yishcha B'Chavila, something like that.
But then, I mean, there still might be a redundancy after by repeating the phrase.
Well, let's say it just started off saying, or let's say, for example, if you took the view that Hakol is a Lashon HaBedieved, right, then it could have said Hakol Shochtin. And then it could have started going into the limitations. Could have left out the word Shechitas Nekshera completely if it's a Lashon of Bedieved. If it's a Lashon of the Chachila, so then maybe it's not so redundant, but it's contradictory, it seems. So it sounds like there's something we got to fit in here. It sounds like that's what the Gemara is going to deal with for another blot and a half, trying to figure out what could make this sentence make sense. Where could it be that there's a little bit of Lechachila, a little bit of Bedieved, and a little bit it's going to make a difference if somebody else is watching. So far, maybe Levi is correct, as far as we know, that all we have here is a mitzias. We have a result-based goal that you need to get something done, and it's got to be done right, but we don't know that there's anything beyond that. We know that the animal needs to be killed in a certain way for it to be effective shechita. We have some concerns that not everybody's going to do a good job, and maybe those concerns are serious enough that we won't even accept it after the fact. But there's an eitzah usually that if there are people who are watching, that may serve to help. Now, what the Gemara is also going to raise in some of these cases, to see if we have time to read all the Gemaras inside today, but the Gemara is also going to raise, we'll skip around a little bit, that sometimes the person himself might be able to testify that he did a good job. And that's going to provoke an interesting question also. So what's the standard here? Is the standard that as long as we can ascertain that it was done properly, that's enough, and anyone's good for that? Who would you think is the best choice to confirm that it was done right? The Shochet himself, or these Acherim that the Mishnah is talking about? What would you be more trusting of, Sam?
Acherim.
Okay, why?
Because the Mishnah says so.
But okay, but logically speaking, what would you?
It's like the whole concept of invasion. There's someone else watching, making okay. sure it's actually being done properly, as opposed to someone just say, like, oh, I did it right, without any proof.
Okay, so you're bringing up an important question. So is this an Adis kind of thing? Is that what we're talking about? And then maybe we should say the Acherim are better? Right, in general, if I want to know, did you do something or not? So am I better off asking you, or am I better off asking somebody who was in the room with you? Well, maybe it depends. Maybe.
Eirachad Namanbisur, generally.
Yes.
So, and in the case of Kasha specifically,
mm-hmm.
Like, the reason you can just go eat at your friend's house is because, like, you trust your friend's mother, or you trust your friend, like, whoever's cooking.
Mm-hmm.
So, a lot of I would say that unless these Acherim came in and said that there is some sort of a quite, like if the, unless there's a reason for me to be concerned about these shechita, I would trust the Shochet. Stop.
So you're bringing some interesting questions. So let's just unpack what you said. There are a couple of issues that are brought up by that. First of all, so Eirach HaNeman B'Yisurin is true. And it's also true that we generally invoke that specifically in Kashrus context, although it might be other things going on also. But the fact that you don't need two Eidim to come and say that the food you're being served at home is kosher probably is based on Eirach HaNeman B'Yisurin. Although there could be other things to it also. So the question of, is that what we're talking about here? Is this an Eidus thing? And then maybe you say, okay, so if it's an Eidus in Kashrus, we've allowed one Eid to be good enough. And that Eid also presumably can be Nogei of a Dover, right? Can be somebody who's involved. So the Shochet is the same. If that's what it's looking for, if we're looking for Eidus, then maybe the Shochet is equal to anybody else. Is this about Eidus? Is this about something else? A good question. But also, Levi, I'd ask you, would you be so comfortable about Eirach HaNeman B'Yisurin if there's something already a little bit off? And if there's something that brings it into question, then might we need a little bit more? So in general, you come home, you're served dinner, so you don't have to assume that there's anything to worry about all of a sudden. But when we're already talking about a category of a shochet that is a little bit questionable, so would we have the same rules? Something to think about. So I think we just salmon, yes?
If it's, we're saying that Eid Echad Ne'eman B'Asurin is fine, is there any issue with maybe the fact that the Mishnah has Lashon Acherim, like a plural Lashon, is that not?
So that's let's leave that open for a second, because we want to figure out, is this about Eidus?
Right.
It doesn't seem like it's about Eidus really in the halachic sense, like, you know, that we have all the halachos of Eidus.
Right, right.
But what are the Acherim doing here?
Right.
And what we can borrow from Eidus also is, so Acherim, if it's like Eidus, so then, as already been commented, so if the things where we want Eidus, others are actually better.
Right?
Then
sorry? As in multiple.
Well, right, multiple, but also somebody not the
okay.
principal player. We'd rather have the Eidus of somebody outside the activity. Here, what will emerge from the Gemara, when you get a chance to see it all, is that it doesn't sound like that. It sounds like the best case scenario is if the Shochet himself can ascertain that everything was done okay. We'll see, the Gemara is going to bring up a few cases, we haven't said them yet, where there's a certain concern. And the concern can be put to rest if the Shochet can tell you it wasn't a concern. And we talk about involving others when maybe he's not there to ask. So that's interesting, because apparently the best is if he can clear things up. And all right, if he's not around, then the Acherim are going to have to fill that in, which is a little bit different than we're used to when we talk about an Eidus kind of consideration. Okay, so far then we have, sounds like Shechita is result based, sounds like it doesn't matter who does it, except that there are certain practical concerns, but if we can put to rest those concerns either through first person testimony, the principal himself telling you what happened, or through other people watching, then maybe that'll take care of our practical concerns. And nothing to worry about. Anyone in the world can shech, no matter what. Well, not anyone. Right, so let's look for a second at the brief Mishnah that appears on Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. And what's very important to be aware of, in general, is you're familiar from different Masechtas. You learn Mishnayos inside Sefer of Mishnayos, so you learn them in the Gemara. They're not always divided up the same way. And sometimes in you're learning Mishnayos and a Sefer of Mishnayos, you'll see it'll be one Mishnah. And in the Gemara, you'll see it'll be broken up into two parts. Or sometimes it's the opposite. You learn the first Parak Sanhedrin. According to the Gemara, it's one Mishnah. Right? Everything is up there on the first Amud, and then the rest of the Parak just comments on that. So the division of Mishnayos is different sometimes in different iterations. And maybe it's more significant than we appreciate, because the next Mishnah might be pretty crucial to understanding this Mishnah. And I'll show you some indications in a second that maybe there really are one Mishnah for whatever significance that has. So what does the Mishnah in Yud Gimel Amud Aleph say? You see here at the bottom of Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. Is really everyone kosher? Not quite. Shchitas oved kochavim nevela. If a idolater, we'll use that word advisedly because we'll see it's a little bit of a discussion exactly who we're talking about here. But an oved of Arizara, if he shechts, no good. It's mamish nevela. In other words, no better than an animal that died on its own. Says Rashi over here on the Mishnah, over kechavim. See here, Rashi the Mishnah, afilo kehilchasa v'acherim ro'onosa. That even if he did it perfectly and other people saw, still no good, and it's subject to tumas masa. In other words, in the veil is matame. So shchita. Sometimes we talked about this a little bit last week. That shchita in general is beneficial for making the animal edible, making the animal kosher to eat. But sometimes we find that even if it doesn't accomplish that, at least it addresses tumas nevela. So let's say if an animal is a trefa and was shechted, so you're not going to be able to eat it because it's a trefa, but the shechita is productive because it at least removes it from tumas nevelas. Here the Mishnah is saying, nothing happening. If an ovid kochavim shechts, then the animal is not kosher to eat, and it is tame, it is fully a nevela, no better than if it died any other way. Hi.
Against our results scenario.
Exactly. Right? Or at least modifies it. Right? We're not ready to go against it fully because the implications of the Mishnah and the Gemara so far did seem to sound like it's result based. But this is definitely something we got to figure out. Why exactly are there people in the world who could bring about the same result perfectly? We can have testimony that that happened. We could have people watching. And nonetheless, that's not going to be acceptable. Hi.
Is that a clarification question?
Yes, please.
In general, when we say Ovei Kochavim, does that mean specific idolaters or any giant in general?
So it's a very good question, and it's very hard to answer. Because the context, first of all, the different contexts with different usages, and there's always the question of the both the censor and of the status of modern-day various religions, what is it, what isn't. So in general, it's a hard question to answer. So if you were to ask, in general, I always worry about this, actually, this is the kind of thing that like somebody might ask you in a newspaper, or in a, you know, and it's hard to give an honest answer because there's no one answer to that question. But you'll see here, hopefully tomorrow, that there's room for specifically questioning that. Are we talking, is this about Avodah Zarah? And it's very important. Because just off the top of your head, not just the question of who it's going to apply to, which obviously is important, but can you tell me another reason why what Yossi is asking is important?
Yeah. They're doing it for Avodah Zarah reasons.
Okay, so, right.
Which would make it.
Okay. So what do you want to say from that? I mean, you're right.
Well, that it's not necessarily that affects our result-based hypothesis. It's just that this is an exception to the din.
Okay. Right, very good, right? So maybe this issue of an Ovid Avodah Zarah doesn't necessarily tell us anything so radically different from what we knew already. Maybe Shechita still is essentially what we thought it was, but the Ovid Avodah Zarah has some, so to speak, affirmative problem, that maybe there's something that he brings to the picture which is worse than nothing in a sense.
Kavana issues?
I very much could tie into Kavana issues. And Kavana is also,
It's hard to gauge what someone's Kavana is.
Yes. So we'll have to see. Kavana can mean a couple things.
Right.
Right. So it's also something we'll have to talk about. So your question is, Sam has kind of taken the top off of, is very important because essentially, just to formulate it a little bit differently, but along the lines of what Sam was saying, that it could be it's come from two different directions. Is the issue that an Oved Avodah Zarah is missing something? Is somehow not up to the threshold required for Shechita? Or should we say that actually an Oved Avodah Zarah theoretically maybe could have worked? But there's an additional problem that he's bringing to the table, and that problem is getting in our way. So that we'll see is going to be subject to a machlokas. And it's very significant, so your question is very significant, not only for the practical implication of who it applies to, but what does it say about the whole day? Baby? You had a question?
No, anymore.
Okay. So I just wanted to call your attention to the fact also that you see that if you look at the Rush, for example, if I'm not mistaken, it's clear that he had this as one Mishnah. It brings in the Akum pretty soon. And if you look also in the Tosefta is printed in different places in different Gemaras. You have to flip through to find it. Each one puts it in its own place. But here, if you look in the Tosefta, in the beginning of Chulin, so the first line, so this, you can get to Marmakomos today because of my computer glitch. but we're all occupied enough. But by tomorrow, hopefully, we'll see the Maamar Kamos, and this will fill you in. And just to give you a little bit of sense of what we want to do, is that you see that the Oved Kochavim issue is throwing a little bit of confusion onto our premises. So if that's the case, so it's very important to figuring out what our Mishnah means, because the sentence is not complete without this Oved Kochavim issue. So what we're going to want to do by tomorrow, when we have a little more time, is hopefully you'll have a little more background in the Gemara, what the Gemara brings up. And then we're going to try to figure out this Oved Kochavim issue, because it's clearly a counterbalance or a big modification to what the Mishnah told us. So tomorrow, if you have more time to see more Gemara, and we'll also hopefully have a little time to see some of the Rishonim talking about this Oved Kochavim issue, because it's going to have a big impact. But let's look at the Tosefta, if you can find it in your Gemaras. So the language of the beginning of Chulin, as it's presented in the Tosefta, is Hakol Ksherin L'Shchot. Everyone is kosher to Shecht. Afilu Kusi. What's a Kusi in this context?
Samaritans.
Right, Samaritans is often the English translation, right? So what does that mean? It means essentially,
I guess, bad convert, I guess.
Okay, but essentially somewhere in between as far as... Right, so basically is the acceptance of Torah Shebichsav, we'll see. So there is a belief in the principles of Torah Shebichsav, but not Torah Shebal Peh, which creates problems for us. But the Kusi makes the cut, no pun intended, as we'll see from the... Sorry? So we can discuss what exactly the proper categorization is, but for our purposes here, the Kusi is not an Ovid Kochavim. Sorry?
Yeah.
We assume on some level that it is. But the Gemara on the Zemudim is going to talk about exactly the relationship the Kusi has to Shechita. Afilu Yisrael Aril. Right? And even a Jew who is uncircumcised, which conveys a certain personal status, but also a certain attitude to Halacha. Afilu Yisrael Shehemer Daito Ovid Eskechavim. And even a Jew who has converted, or has tried to convert, we don't necessarily recognize the possibility of conversion out of Judaism. But nonetheless, he tried to, so he's kosher. But, Sefta goes on, Shechita Sa'ivet Kechavim, Hare Zu Psula. So the Shechita of a idolater, that is puzzle. Different than a Jew who has tried to convert to Avodah Kochavim. V'shchitas hakof, harei zeh psula. What does that mean? Curious George. Right, if you have an animal that's trained to shecht, you have a monkey that's trained to shecht, that's also no good. Harei zeh psula, that's no good. Shenamar v'zavachta v'yachalta, lo shezavach ovid kochavim, v'lo shezavach hakof. So here the reference to the pasuk that we saw that we've been discussing from Parshas Re'eh. So the pasuk says v'zachat v'zavachta. So says the Tosefta here that there's exclusions that come from this v'zavachta. Apparently, lo shazavach over kachavim. Not that it was done by an idolater. Not that it was done by a monkey, and not that it was shechted on itself. So all of that seems to suggest that there is some positive status that's necessary for Shechita, and it's lacking in certain scenarios. It was a non-Jew, if it happened on its own, if it happened through an animal, there's something missing.
Or there's something in common with the kof and an ovid
mezavach. Right, or it sounds like there's something missing in common, there's something that's not there. But we'll have to see. Is that the only way to see things? Or is it that there's something that's added here that's the nature of the problem? So we have to figure out what exactly is the message here. So just to give you a little bit more of a framework, and hopefully in Sadie you'll be able to see a little bit more, and we'll be able to try to bring all this together. So if there's a limitation, if there is some aspect that the Akum doesn't fulfill, and we'll see, you'll see from the sources tomorrow, that apparently there is a standard in order to be able to shecht, and that is known as a bar zvicha. You have to be somebody who is subject to the concept of shechita. We'll have to figure out what that means. So apparently there is a framework here. Not everybody can shecht, everybody who's a bar zvicha can shecht. So what do you need in order to be a bar zvicha? What exactly are the limitations? What exactly is the message here? And if you get a little further in the Gemara, so you'll see that the Gemara is going to bring up various scenarios in order to try to make the Mishnah work. And it's interesting because if we're saying this is what the Mishnah is telling us, so then that's going to be a little hard to understand why that's the first message in Chulin. Or why it's even a message in Chulin at all, as the Gemara is going to ask. So, for example, the Gemara is going to suggest maybe we're talking about somebody who's Tamei. So the Gemara says, okay, who cares if he's Tamei? This is Chulin, this isn't Kachim. That's what our Masech is called. So why is it a problem if he's Shechting Chulin? And then the Gemara is going to say, well, maybe it's a case of somebody who is taken upon himself to eat Chulin al Taras HaKodesh, to apply the rules of Tara to Chulin. Okay, so what do you do with that? You know, that's what the Mishnah is coming to tell us. Or is the Gemara going to discuss also, what about in the context of Kachim? What if you have a Tameh who does Shecht Kachim? So is that still Kasher, L'chachila, B'diavad? If he uses a very long knife, so he could say that he didn't touch the animal. Are we worried that maybe he did touch the animal? Is it good enough if he says he didn't touch the animal? Or are we talking about a kusi, as the Tosafta just brought in? What should the halacha be about a kusi? The Gemara is going to talk about that also. So, if he's somebody who himself cares about shechita, so does that make us happy? If we know that he himself would only eat shechted meat, so therefore, if he shechts, can we trust him? Gemara is going to bring that up also. Or what if we don't know if the person knows enough about Hilchos Shechita? What if we give him a Bechina? What if we give him a Bechina afterwards? Is that enough? So essentially, the Gemara is bringing up a number of scenarios which are candidates to plug this into the difficult framework of the Mishnah. So let's try to recap the questions that we've asked, and this will hopefully set us up for tomorrow, so we should have a productive tomorrow in seeing more Gemaras and seeing some of the Rishonim that deal with it. And again, we're going to particularly focus on this concept of Shechita Sobir Kochavim, because clearly there's a big part of the puzzle here. So just to give a little bit of a sense of what the next few days have in store for us, we're trying to take this discussion to the next level and see how really encompassing HaKol Shochten is and what does that say about the actual requirements for Shechita. So we see that the concept is tested by a number of cases. So just to give you a little bit of a framework for the coming attractions, so you'll see the examples the Gemara brings up, and you try to think about these examples, because if we're suggesting that the Mishnah is talking about the Kusi, the Mishnah is talking about the Tamei with Chulin Nechal Taras HaKodesh, all these scenarios, why is this belong here in the first Mishnah in Chulin if these are the scenarios we're talking about? And in what way do these scenarios really tap into some very fundamental issue that should be the first din we need to know about in Hilchos Shechita in Chulin? So try to think about that. And we'll then go tomorrow, God willing, to the concept of Akum, because it clearly is a counterbalance to the opening statement. So we'll try to understand that a little bit. And then following that, a day or two after, we have to understand how Kusi and Mumer fit in with the Gemara is talking about. And then Be'ez Hashem will also talk about Katan, because Katan brings up some interesting points when you talk about somebody who's not obligated in mitzvos, and the Mishnah right away tells us he's still in the game. What does that tell us? So that's on our agenda, and then God willing we'll talk about the Nashim also, that whole discussion and its implications for our contemporary halachic debate, which are very significant. Be'ez Hashem, that's what's on the immediate horizon for us. Okay, so try to keep all these questions in your mind tomorrow as you go further in the Gemara and you see the Rishonim, and hopefully we'll get a perspective on how all of this comes together. Wish everyone a wonderful day. Should be only good things.
Ari,
yeah.
All right, very good to meet you.